Commissioner of Highways against Barbara Lee King, Mark R. Herring, Attorney General, Susan A. Cobb, Deputy Attorney General, Jeffrey R. Allen, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Steve Allen, L. Stephen Everett, Joseph P. Walter, Joseph P. Sherman, Jeremy P. Hopkins, to Matt Wood.
You may proceed.
May it please the Court, Stephen Cobb, Deputy Attorney General, along with Jeff Allen, Senior Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Commissioner of Highways. With the permission of the Court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes in rebuttal.
All right.
We're before the Court this morning on a case about the improper application of Virginia law and the exclusion of expert testimony in an eminent domain case. As the Court is aware, eminent domain trials largely turn on a battle of experts. First, they opine as to the value of a tape, and then they opine as to what, if anything, has happened to the residue or the remainder of the land. And so opining on the remainder, there is one of three options that experts are left with. The default position is that there has been no damage to the residue or the remainder, and that is evident in this Court's opinion in Glatz. The burden of proof is on the landowner to contend that there has been damage left to the residue, or that the condemnor can say that the residue has been enhanced. In the trial on this matter, the Commissioner of Highways offered an expert, Jay Kahl, who had 50 years of experience. There was no argument that the expert was in any way unqualified. There was no argument that the proffered testimony of the Commonwealth's expert was not relevant or unhelpful to the trier of fact. There was no argument that the opinion was made on insufficient facts or data, or that the principles or methods used were reliably applied to the facts of that case.
So your main point is the only defense you were putting on the residue is there was no damage, and it didn't matter how you measured it or didn't measure it because there was none.
That is correct, Your Honor. And so what we have here, though, is that the improper application as to the quantum of damages. So if the landowner is saying, first, that yes, there was damage, and two, this is how we measure it, that burden on the landowner was improperly applied in the exclusion of the commissioner's expert, in this instance, at the trial court.
It's almost as if the trial court was thinking you had to negate every element of the prima facie residue damage claim or else not put on any expert at all.
Indeed, the trial court was, in fact, asking the Commissioner of Highways to prove a negative.
Well, our case law has suggested that the proper way to have an expert opinion on that subject is to ask the expert if they have an opinion as to the value before the take, an opinion as to the value of the residue after the take. So I suspect your position is, and you may be right, that if the testimony is that there is no diminution of value at all, perhaps that suggests, or by implication, the value before and the value after are the same. There's no need now to have that kind of testimony that we have suggested is necessary for an expert witness. Is that a fair statement?
Very much so, Your Honor. It's really a two-part inquiry. Is there damage? And then what is the quantum of those damages? The case law that's been cited that Your Honor has alluded to talks about what is the measure of that quantum. But if you cannot answer that first question in the affirmative, then you don't get to what is that measuring calculus. So in this instance, there was the relevant and proper testimony by this expert that the residue had the same utilities as before, that all of the improvements existing before would remain after, the land would continue to maintain its former B1C zoning, that the property could be assessed in the same manner as before, that the only difference in the property after as compared to before is a slight reduction in size and the existence of a small sliver of permanent drainage in the Dominion, Virginia easement, that neither of those impact in a detrimental way on the utility or value of the remainder. To quote, it is my opinion that the land remainder, if vacant, would have the same and highest best use and value after as compared to before, and the property suffers no diminution as a result of that proposed acquisition. So there is a basis to maintain that status quo, that there was no damage, and therefore you do not need to get to that second calculus of going into the quantum of damage.
I question whether the defense witness has to get into any of the calculus, because this, the calculus is part of the plaintiff's prima facie burden of proof on damages. And a defense can put on an expert to just pick away at the plaintiff's expert without picking away at every single component of the plaintiff's expert's opinion, plaintiff in this case being the party with the burden of proof. So, I mean, isn't that the more fundamental error that you're asserting?
Your Honor is correct that there is no case law that talks about applying that quantum measure of damages on behalf of the condemnor.
I guess what I'm getting at is, let's say a Med-Mal case, and the plaintiff's expert comes in and says, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, and here are the ways, the five ways that the anatomy of the plaintiff's body was changed. And a defense can put on an expert on one of those 10 points without addressing any of the other 9 points, and that's perfectly admissible because the defense has no burden of proving anything. They can just chip away at what the plaintiff's or the party with the burden of proof is saying, if it's based upon reliable and reasonable foundation.
That's absolutely correct. It's an issue that goes to the weight of the testimony, not its admissibility.
But if the expert is going to give an opinion of the ultimate question, which is the value, isn't it a little bit different than a medical negligence case? In other words, what you have is it's the ultimate question. Did you lose anything? What is the value? If you're going to testify as to value, the matrix that we've had in the past is, yes, I have an opinion on what it was worth before the take, and I have an opinion as to what it was worth after the take, and it didn't have any change. The question, it seems to me, in this case, is do we require those magic questions when the answers to them are obvious if your opinion is that there was no loss?
Well, I think Your Honor is correct. They don't have to get to that second part of the calculus. It's slightly different than a Med-Mal situation, but trying to extrapolate that out, if you're complaining that you have a broken finger, they don't make you go through and do an entire CT scan in order to opine on anything that might otherwise
possibly
be wrong.
Justice Kelsey is pointing out, I think pretty clearly, that the burden is on the moving party. There's no question about that. But the question is, should we modify our case law, and I think this is your position, to demonstrate when the answer is obvious, why do you have to have these magic questions before and after if there's nothing in between?
I think that is correct, and to the extent that the case law has been silent on that issue, and extra clarification would be useful to say that when there has been no damage, there is no reason to go into that additional calculus. There is also no doubt, based upon the record, that this was detrimental to the findings of the commission in this instance, as two came back with the determination that there had been no damage to the residue and that they had not been afforded the expert testimony on that issue. So as we look at this, it is not only an issue of improper application of Virginia law, but it is one that definitely showed prejudice in the trial of this matter. And, Your Honor, with that, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time and ask that the court to reverse.
You have quite a bit.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Steve Emmert, and along with Jeremy Hopkins, I represent the landowner in this appeal. I probably need to address this first. This is not an appeal about the burden of proof. It never has been about the burden of proof. It's solely about the admissibility of evidence. We know that because the commissioner voluntarily undertook to introduce evidence as to what he thought the damage to the residue was, opining that he thought it was zero.
But the quality of an expert's opinion depends on the position being advanced. For example, an expert advancing a plaintiff's damage opinion has to produce enough evidence that a reasonable fact finder could reach a preponderance conclusion as to causation and amount, etc. But that's not the burden of a defense. The defense has no burden of proof at all. They can simply chip away at what's being said. And as the chief just said, this opinion says, quote, in my opinion, dot, 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 the same value, reading now verbatim, after as compared to before, the land has the same value after it's compared, a zero difference and no diminution. How is that not enough?
Because there are only two ways that you can come to the conclusion that there is no difference.
Well, he doesn't have to prove there's no difference. He has to raise enough of a foundation to cause less than a preponderance conviction that the plaintiff or the party with the burden of proof expert is right.
I'll disagree with you on that. I think any person advancing an expert opinion has the burden to establish the foundation for that opinion.
Well, the foundation is all the initial stuff he talked about. The irregular shape wasn't different. The improvements weren't different. The same utilities, the zoning is the same, etc. That's the foundation.
As I mentioned, I think there are two ways to get there. Only two ways. One is to do the math, which you've directed us in every other case involving eminent domain. The other is to trust the ipse dixit of the expert, who says, I believe that there's no damage. That wasn't good enough in Holiday Motor versus Walters. It wasn't good enough in Hyundai versus Duncan. It wasn't good enough in CNH America versus Smith. You required them to go through the process that you've always required. You must do the testing. In this case, you must do the calculus that our case law has uniformly stated. You've never stated that doesn't apply to condemnors, even in cases involving damage.
But we've never...
Perhaps we should. In the words of that great legal scholar, Billy Preston, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. And if it indeed is no damages, why can't you just directly say, hey, there's no damage to the residue for this reason, this reason, this reason, and this reason. And if indeed that's correct, you don't need to know what was the starting point, because you already know that the ending point is exactly the same as the starting point.
Because that's circular reasoning. It assumes...
It's not circular at all.
Oh, it is circular reasoning because it assumes the beginning there's no damage, and so therefore I don't have to prove there's no damage.
I come to the conclusion that there's no damage by looking at the nature of the take and looking at the nature of the property. And if I conclude that there's no damage... And this expert's opinion was, even though he did not begin where we have previously required experts to begin... He, at the same time, looked at each element of the take and what it would do to the property, to the use of the property, to the accessibility of the property, to the size of the property. And once you say zero, then why do you have to know the exact quantum of value beforehand?
Because I believe that's the only way to get to zero, is to make the subtraction. The only way to do that is to assume, other than by subtracting...
You're subtracting zero. You already know you're subtracting zero.
Actually, you're not subtracting zero. You're subtracting a number, and I'll invent one, $1.2 million, and saying that it's $1.2 million before and after. That's how you get to zero. That's how an expert has to do it. That's how the expert was required to do it in those tort cases.
Maybe we shouldn't be requiring it in cases where it's the condemnor. Maybe there's the distinction. But I guess I'm getting it to why... If the property was worth 1.2 as opposed to being worth 1.1, it's not going to change his opinion that there is no damage.
I understand that. But the only way to do that is to rely upon his ipse dixit. That's the only way to get there.
How is it an ipse dixit if he has 50 years of experience, he's knowledgeable about the zoning, the characteristics, the whatever?
It's exactly the situation that we had in Holiday Motor and in Hyundai, where the experts... And Mann and I've forgotten the other one had 35 and 40 years of experience respectively, and they said, I don't need to do the testing. The data speaks to me as one experienced in the craft. That's the basis that you held was inadmissible and was not a sufficient foundation in those cases. And unless you're willing to carve out a special privilege...
I mean, the analogy that came to my mind is, suppose in a personal injury case, the plaintiff wants to prove lost wages. So he has to... present evidence that these are the jobs that I worked at X number of hours per week, and this is my loss. And so he has to prove, because he's reaching into the pocket of the defendant, I want my damages, so here's my situation. And the defense puts on an expert that just says, no, in fact, your injury is not consequential at all. You're perfectly able to continue working. And so I don't have to go into the nitty-gritty of how many hours, in fact, you worked, and what your hourly rate was. I'm just saying your injury wasn't bad at all. You can keep working all those jobs. What's wrong with that analogy?
I think it's a different calculus because those experts are talking about what your functional capacity is. Can you still do this job? Can you still do that job? Can you still do this job? In this situation, there is a difference in the property. The commissioner contends that it's a minuscule difference, but there is a difference.
Yeah.
And in order for an expert to say, I believe that that difference makes zero difference in the value, he has to do the math. It's not a situation of capacity. It's not a situation of, in this case, the function that the property can serve as a daycare center. Is there a difference in the property?
Well, the difference in the property is that some of the property was taken, and the primary purpose of the trial was to determine what's the value of what was carved out. But what this expert is saying is, once we determine the value of what was carved out, once we've determined the value of the fee take or easement take, I don't recall the exactly in that instance. But once we determine that value, the functionality of what is left is exactly the same as the functionality of what there was before. So, in other words, there is no damage to the residue beyond the take itself. That's what I read the expert to say. You can still use it for exactly the same purposes you could before. It's simply smaller. And the part that was taken to make it smaller is worth X.
I understand. There's actually two components under the constitutional analysis, the take and damage. So they're both part of what the commission has to find,
indeed,
the jury has to find. And we know that there are different burdens on that, but that's part of the calculus. And that's why the commissioner elected in his case in chief to affirmatively present this evidence. He didn't wait for us to put on evidence. He wanted to put on his own evidence. And so that's another reason why this is not a case about burden of proof. The burden of proof never shifted. The agreed jury instruction certified that that the burden was still on the landowner. But in this case, given the fact that there has been a change in the property, there has been a change in the dimensions of the property, in order to ascertain that there is zero damages, our law indicates only one method. If you want to create a new method, I understand you have the capacity to enact sea changes that I can't do from this
election. So the only method is you hire an appraiser to sit down and reappraise the property after the take. That's the only method, and we've rendered a black letter rule of law that if you don't do that, even when your answer is 0000 difference and all the numbers before and all the numbers afterwards are exactly the same, if you don't go through the process of paying the money and doing the paperwork, you can't put the evidence on. That's a pretty strongly described rule of law, and if we've said it that broadly, maybe we've said it too broadly.
Well, the commissioner has agreed that that's the rule, because in his manual, he requires all of his appraisers to assess the before and the after in any case in which it's going to be contested.
We don't use commissioner's manuals to determine the law of Virginia.
Well, then, in that case, I can use the force of law. The Code of Virginia requires that appraisers use standards promulgated by the board of the Real Estate Appraiser Board, and that board has incorporated the standards of the Uniform Professional Appraisal Practice Standards, and they require that they may do so. Now, there is an avenue for an appraiser to get around that if he wishes to do so. He can make what's called an extraordinary assumption. That's right in USPAP. But USPAP also says that he has to, quote it directly, state all extraordinary assumptions clearly and conspicuously, something that this appraiser never did. He simply said, I didn't look at that. I'd assume that it wasn't applicable there. So, yes, there is force of law in Virginia using these professional standards that says if you're going to make an assumption, you have to state it explicitly. If you're going to say there's no damage, you have to make sure that there's no damage. You can't make an assumption. You can't say based upon what my expertise tells me without plunging into the doctrines of Holiday Motor and Hyundai, because we always require experts to have a foundation, and that's all this case is about.
But how well does the analogy to products liability hold? Because there, if you're talking about, well, if you move the airbag to this spot, it would have been safer. Well, all right, that's what you say, but how do we know that's true? But isn't it a grayer area with real estate appraisals where, in good faith, you can have differing estimates as to, you know, there's a lot more art than science in real estate versus products liability.
I think it is actually the same situation, because I'll change the words slightly of what you just said. You say that there's no damage, but other than you saying so, how do we know that? Because the method that you have always specified is do the math, subtract the before and the after. And for this expert, he just decided, I'm expert enough, I can skip that step. I can certify that there's no damage because I believe there is none based upon all of my experience and just looking at the property. It's only a small take.
Well, that's not the entirety of the testimony. He went, after he said that, he went on to say why. And it's the why part that actually bolsters the qualifications. If this is all boiled down to math, I think the question before the court is, did we go too far saying that you had to do this calculation before and after in every case? 99.9% of the cases, you're going to have that. But we have a rule in our case law that says you have to do it in all of them. What the question is for us is, well, maybe we went a little bit too far. We didn't anticipate this kind of case. Interestingly enough, Mr. Call might be wrong. He might very well be wrong. But the question is, does he get heard? Because it's a question of admissibility, not the weight.
Right. That's from Bitar versus Rahman. The foundation is an admissibility question. It has to be raised immediately. That's why we raised it at trial. It is possible for us to carve out a special privilege for condemnors. You can do that. You can rule against me and I'll lose.
I don't think that's what it would be. It wouldn't be a special privilege. It would be a very pragmatic understanding that an expert who is defending a party that is being met with a claim which the defendant has no burden of proof on is not required to refute every element of the prima facie case that the party with the burden of proof has. That's not Hyundai versus Holiday Motors versus Comden-Nor favoritism. That's a neutral principle of law that I believe is applicable across the board.
The way you phrase it, it's not neutral, and it will bleed into other case areas because, for example, the defendant at Holiday Motor could have offered an expert with zero foundation for his opinion, but who just said, I think the plaintiff's expert is wrong. I haven't done any testing. I haven't done any.
You think there's zero foundation in this case for Mr. Call's testimony? Is that what you think?
I stated it in the strongest way I could in order to respond to your hypothetical. I understand that his foundation is, I've looked at the property and I've got a lot of experience in what the Chief Justice has indicated. But he hasn't done what you've required. He hasn't done what you've always required an expert to do. You have to do the testing. You have to perform the work before you can give the opinion.
The math that you're talking about for appraising property is not really math. You do these varied variables. What's the shape? What's the impact of the road and the access and the improvements and the utilities and the zoning? You just do all those things plus more, and you put a number on it. And it's a bit of a guess because you're talking about a willing buyer and a willing seller, and there's no one standing in front of you.
Right.
So, to me, part of your argument that I recoil against is the idea that there's some sort of scientific math that leads to truth, and you can only get to zero if you use the math, when really underneath that math is a gigantic series, a cascading series of assumptions.
I understand, and let me make sure that what I'm saying is clear. The math is the last step. I've been referring to it because that's the ultimate test. I recognize that in this case, in all the corporate damages cases involving fraud claims, for example, and even to a degree in the tort cases, there's a lot that goes into it beyond just what's the difference calculus that is made at the end. That was true in a case that I argued last year in this court involving a large fraud judgment because there was a lot of calculation that had to go into it. But ultimately, using all the subjective factors that went into those cases and that would go into this one, ultimately it comes down to a final calculus. What's the difference in the value? And that's what you've always required, and that's what I ask that you will continue to require. Otherwise, we will have a different playing field, one sloped in favor of the condemnor. I thank you for your interest in the
issue. When you say it's always been required, it's always been required of the party who has the burden of proof in a condemnation action.
It's always been required for admission of expert testimony. Because I continue to believe this is not a case about burden of proof. In order to get testimony in, may I finish the answer, Your Honor?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. In order to get evidence in, it doesn't matter who has the burden of proof. That's irrelevant. The question is there a sufficient basis for the expert to say, I believe X? And my time is expired. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Ever so briefly, Your Honor. This isn't a testimony that's been offered with no foundation. As Your Honor alluded to, Mr. Call offered five different criteria for the basis of his opinion that there was going to be no damage. The issues raised by Mr. Emmert are perfectly fine ones to raise in a cross-examination but they are not ones that are appropriate to exclude the expert testimony. As this court opined at the end of the Glass decision, that the commissioners are not bound to accept the value opinions of the expert if they determine they were not fairly supported by the facts or the circumstances. But it is important that that expert testimony be able to be offered to say to that first important question, no, residue was not damaged, before ever getting to a second question of, if there was damage, what is the quantum, how do we measure? This is a very important area that needs that extra bit of clarification, that it is a burden that is on the landowner to prove by preponderance of the evidence that, one, there was damage, and two, using the calculus to determine what the quantum is. In this case, the condemnor offered a expert that in any sort of other measure was qualified, was providing relevant evidence. That testimony was excluded to the detriment of the Commissioner of Highways. We would ask that the court reverse this decision and remand back.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Call
you.
The next case.